Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 168 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. We've called a bit of an impromptu podcast here because we weren't planning on doing anything pre-Spurs, but we have because, as we all know, Everton have always got news coming out of them, and it's been quite negative over the last few days, given that we've been referred to this independent commission, independent panel by the Premier League, due to losses that we've made and us breaching financial fair play. Delighted to be joined by the Athletic's Greg O'Keefe to speak to me and Lee about it today. And Greg, I'm going to come straight to yourself if I can first of all. This has come as somewhat of a surprise to the club, really, hasn't it, based on the assurances that were given to them not too long ago by the Premier League?
Yeah, certainly. I'd first of all, just say and thanks for having me on, lads. Big fan of the podcast. And it's a shame that it's often in, like, when something's going wrong. But as you said, really, in the build-up, Mike, that's, you know, all too frequently the case, unfortunately, isn't it, the last couple of seasons? And it's fair to say that this took everyone connected with Everton by surprise. Not clearly everyone's aware that Everton have been had issues with compliance with the Premier League's profits and sustainability / financial fair play rules. It's been well chronicled how close Everton sailed to being in breach. But I think what's fundamentally shocked everyone and just left Everton a little bit kind of sideswiped was the fact that they thought that their efforts to, you know, kind of be extra transparent, to build relationships with the Premier League, internal relationships, to kind of go that extra mile to prove that they were trying to reach compliance and that they believed that they had been, you know, even in the forthcoming set of accounts, that, you know, they believed that there's certainly when they were submitted, they believed that they're in compliance because of things like the Sir Richarlison. Something fundamental has changed. Something on the Premier League's end, the tables have turned and they've decided to refer Everton. And I think that shock goes right up to the very top, really, at Goodison. As I heard it on Friday night, trying to assess, you know, in sort of the immediate aftermath of the news, just what had gone on. And I think that there wasn't panic at the top of Everton at that point. It wasn't like they were surprised, but it wasn't panic because I understand that the club still believe that their case for not having breached the rules is strong. But as like an observer, not say neutral observer, of course, none of us are neutral when it comes to the Blues, but you'd have to be concerned that the Premier League, look, it could be a million and one political reasons why they've done what they've done, but you'd have to be concerned that they also must be confident that there's been a breach or why such a change in the way they've approached it.
Exactly that. You know, something has got to change because, like you mentioned, the club have been in conversation with the Premier League for the best part of 18 months, 2 years. We've had to have, from this again, this is only my understanding, contract renewals have had to be signed off. Obviously, recruitment of players have had to be signed off. We mentioned the sale of Richarlison. That was at the back end of the accounting period for 21-22, which is what the Premier League have raised the issue with. So with Everton being in such close contact with the league, that's where the element of surprise comes in. And that's where, like you say, something has got to have changed. And what that is, you know, we'd be surmising, we'd be guessing if we were to sort of say what we thought it was. Obviously, it must stem from the accounts obviously going in there due to be released publicly this week. So yeah, it's got to stem from something that the Premier League have seen on the accounts, which they're no longer satisfied with. But do you think, like, obviously it was Burnley and Leeds who raised this issue, this complaint, if you like, at the near the back end of last season? Obviously Leeds dropped the complaint based on the fact that he stayed in the Premier League, so they weren't then too bothered. It does sort of, media coverage has mentioned this 10-month investigation on the back of that. Do you think it is solely on the back of just Burnley having their complaint carry on and the Premier League have got to be seen to be doing something about it?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, such a question that cuts to the heart of it all, like, you know, what's prompted it. I'd actually be surprised if it was still something that's happened at Burnley's persistence, you know, if they've been repeatedly contacting the Premier League and pushing their case. Now, I know sort of like executives at Burnley were quite, you know, sort of fiercely on the front foot about it last season. But fast forward to now, and they're without a doubt going to be back in the Premier League next season in robust shape, you'd imagine, if they can keep the manager and the squad they've got together and all that. So that's not to say that they obviously wouldn't claim they would rather have stayed in the Premier League and, you know, not suffered the financial hit of dropping out. But I get the feeling it's not been a case of Burnley consistently still pushing it. As you rightly say, Leeds dropped their part of the complaint. I struggle to look beyond the pressure on the Premier League when you see Richard Masters sat in front of select committees being grilled on things like Newcastle's ownership. Obviously, he spoke about it because he can't at this stage now, but Man City and ourselves, I think that there's probably a part of this which is the Premier League desperately trying to prove that it can self-govern unless, you know, that they have that autonomy taken away from them by the government, which I think they would be absolute anathema to the Premier League. They, you know, that they wouldn't want to surrender any sort of independence, if you like, and have to be overseen by a governmental body. So I suspect this might be part of their campaign to convince the government they don't need to be regulated.
Is this like these parliamentary hearings then? These are driven by what happened with the potential Super League developments, wasn't it now? Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's ironic that Everton were basically one of the most vocal against that and actually came out of it, you know, in a position of being like, you know, fair play, Everton were standing up for what the right thing here. And now potentially these hearings are now being conducted with the Premier League. And now, ironically, now it's, you know, Everton are at the forefront of those coming conversations.
Exactly. I think that's it. You know, Everton kind of felt that they did have a good reputation within the league. And obviously there was, you know, a little bit of... I think that's taken a hit, as we, you know, on the wider sense, we talk about the way the club's managed. But I think that the sense that they'd been leniently dealt with by the Premier League had irked more clubs than just Burnley and Leeds, by the way, but obviously pushed them into complaining. And so I think Everton's sort of reputation isn't what it was, even within the Premier League. Now, you know, Denise Barrett-Baxendale was quite a popular figure, and I think her stance against Super League, amongst other CEOs, was obviously not the ones who were trying to get it up and running, but, you know, the rest was applauded. But then I think that they probably might take a different view of the club's overall ownership and feel that Everton were kind of on course for something like this, and that you know, that it's about time, because I think they'll probably look at it and from what I'm hearing and say that, you know, that Everton, although it's the scale of it is far, far different from what's happened with Man City, that the referral is right, and, you know, whatever the consequences end up being, if Everton are judged to have breached the rules, you know, that they'll have had coming. But I think that's an important if, because, like I say, the heart of this and the difficulty is, and you mentioned earlier, Mike, as well, about the speculation, you know, and since Friday we've seen understandable speculation, like, was it Dele Alli, was it his deal, was it this, was it that? Unfortunately, in absence of comments from anyone, you're always going to get that. Now, in this instance, I don't think it's a case of, you know, the club recently have been guilty of not communicating very well at all, but there's really not that much they can say in this instance. And the same goes to the Premier League in terms of, you know, they've outlined why they've referred Everton. And after that, it needs to be, you know, we will have to wait till the hearing, because it could sort of impugn the sort of impartiality of that hearing. So it just leaves a huge void, and of course adds another layer of that uncertainty, which we're getting used to living in at the moment with Evertonians, over the future of the club on the pitch in the Premier League and its ownership and investments, of course.
I just can't help but think Everton are sort of being made an example of here. I know obviously City were the first ones to get, obviously, you know, essentially in the media and criticise ahead of these hearings with the government. But Everton are obviously an easier fish to catch here, aren't they, compared to City, which is obviously a lot more protracted and a lot more detailed. Everton just seems to sort of focus on one season. I just hope we're not being made an example of, you know what I mean, because it is, like I said, an easier sort of investigation to run over. And I honestly don't know. I mean, I personally think, I don't know what your views are, we've had a chat about this, Mike, in the past, but I think, you know, FFP, if you want to call it that, I've been really vocal on this podcast about it, saying it was brought in initially to try and protect clubs from going insolvent, from going under. And I can understand the reasons behind that, especially with the money flooding into the game. But also, for me, the biggest thing about it, it seems to have sort of maintained the status quo in the English Football League. It's like prevented competition, you know, from other teams rivaling the so-called top four, five or six or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, as a result, we see what we see now, which is basically the same teams winning the same trophies pretty much every year. You know what I mean? And I've always said in sport, competition is everything. You know, if we can enter into a league or into a season where five, six, seven teams can win the league, that's great. That's a great product. The fact that we, you know, realistically, it's only going to be one, two, maybe three teams now. And that's always been the case pretty much since the Premier League started. I just find it, it's just, I don't know, you can see why fans are becoming disillusioned with football in general. Do you know what I mean? Because of that reason, because we're in it to try and win trophies. And bar the odd anomalies of Wigan's, Leicester's and things like that, it's pretty much the same teams every year, isn't it?
Absolutely is, yeah. And you know, the wider debate about fair play will just rage on and on and on. And I think, like you said, a lot of people might have agreed with it in principle, but in practice, it's all it's done is maintain the status quo. In fact, it's strengthened the status quo and prevented clubs like Everton and others from breaking into that club, especially timing-wise. You know, probably came a little late for us, and maybe depending on your view of the owner, maybe it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the sort of the right type of mega money, if you like, to be able to compete. But whatever way you look at it, I don't think its current shape has been a positive thing for competition and for football fans. I think as well, you know, if you look at the trend at the moment, it does seem to be a push towards leagues trying to be look like they're taking hints of financial foul play seriously. So obviously in Serie A, the clamp at the moment, there's a huge investigation going on with Juventus, some serious consequences for that. In Spain and La Liga, you know, the scrutiny over Barcelona and alleged payments to refereeing bodies is going to rumble and rumble on. So I think it's a trend across those big European leagues to try and prove that they're doing what they need to do to make the sport fairer. And just to avoid, I suppose it might even come back to the Super League, to avoid an opportunity for upstarts and new to say that, you know, European football is, you know, it's corrupt, it's this, it's that, it's not fit for purpose. Let's have this new shiny Super League. Maybe this is the big leagues of Europe fighting back. Unfortunately, we've been caught in the crossfires.
I think obviously the concern for many is that this is very much a test case, isn't it? Obviously, Manchester City at the other end of the scale in terms of the money that they bring in, and you know, theirs is centered around more sort of sponsorships amongst other things, and getting the books looking even better than they are, and it's a way of circumnavigating and circumventing the rules, so to speak. Whereas with Everton, it's the other way, where we're spending more than we're bringing in effectively, and that's a concern amongst us as fans, really. Is okay, well, if worst case scenario Everton are found guilty in this process, what's the outcome? You know, the outcome, a fine. I think a fine is not going to be what comes our way. I've got to be honest, because if we are guilty, they're going to look to be making a stand and have some kind of examples be set and say, you know, it's going to look more like a transfer ban, potentially points deduction. And that's a concern that those fans have got as well. Okay, you know, just say for argument's sake, you bring a transfer ban in, for example, for 12 months. If that's brought in pre this transfer window and we've got to go into another season with this squad, then you're almost saying you're going to be fighting once again at the wrong end of the table because you can't improve it. So that would be horrendous. If you look at a points deduction, now, other examples, Birmingham City, I think, in the Championship got a 9-point deduction, which centred around, I think they were, again, only my understanding, they were in conversation with the league. They signed a player which was basically wasn't signed off by the league effectively, and they breached any kind of agreement that they had, and they were deducted 9 points. Now, imagine Everton starting a season off with minus 9 points. You know, that means we'd have to get 49, 50 points to effectively stay in the league. So I think, Greg, a lot of the concerns, and obviously you're a fan as well, as obviously a journalist, these concerns are around what could the result be and how can we suffer? And when I did my piece this week on the BBC, I mentioned about, you know, I look forward to the media outcry in terms of, you know, how the fans, Everton fans, shouldn't be punished for the decisions made by their owner and board, as we saw, obviously, during the Super League times. But I just think that we all feel that if any team is going to suffer, if any fans are going to be made to suffer, it will be us. And that's the major concern, I think, for me and many Everton fans at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an understandable concern as well, that it does feel as if Everton, if there's a chance, and maybe it's a little bit of fatalism from us as Blues, because there are so many setbacks, but it does feel as if we're ripe to be used as a scapegoat here. And until I kind of understand more about where, and look, maybe there'll be signs in the full figures when the accounts are released, until I understand like how the Premier League have kind of claimed that there is a breach, when there's been such hard work between the club and the league to avoid that, then I won't know, you know, how sort of outraged to be, if that makes sense. But I mean, look, the problem is, if we are in breach, I absolutely still agree that, you know, it's sod's law, that it's us that fall as the example first. But it'll be very difficult to have full sympathy with, I mean, for us as a club and for the supporters, of course not. It is just absolutely typical. But it'll be more, I think, frustration and anger at the people responsible for avoiding this, because they've clearly known how fragile the situation was. And if they have somehow allowed it to happen, I'm saying if, then it'll be hugely negligent, and I think it'll only add to the dismay. But I think another thing's worth noting is the time frame of this. Now, I don't expect it to take as long as Manchester City's case. Obviously, that's going to be dragged out and out and out, you would imagine, with over 100 alleged breaches, Everton just the one. Now, that doesn't mean that Everton's is cut and dry and dead easy. It's still going to be complicated. It'll still involve claim and counterclaim, and it'll still involve some lawyers, you know, going through this with a fine-tooth comb, painstakingly. But not knowing how long it'll take is something else that is just going to hang over the club in a period, like I said earlier, when there's so much uncertainty, and it's really, really unhelpful.
Yeah, I think it. You know, you make a good point there. It still doesn't excuse, you know, since we have come into money, since machinery's come in, how we've effectively been run. You know, it's been a bit Wild West, you know, Goodison Park in terms of, you know, when Koeman came in, the money we were throwing around, the wages we were paying people, the contracts we were giving out. You know, you look back at that now and it was all, you know, in hindsight, completely negligent. You know, how not to spend money when you come into money. You know, you can see that with Newcastle now. I mean, obviously, that, you know, they're effectively owned by a sovereign wealth fund. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, effectively a country. I mean, where do you draw the line with that? You know, and I know you said obviously Masters has been answering questions on that. Well, that's another debate for another day. But they're obviously now a lot more cautious with the way they're spending. But I just think, you know, it is massively negligent from the people at the club. I know obviously they're under a lot of pressure to resign at the minute. I think certain people probably should walk away for the good of the club. But that's again another conversation. But it's just another thing, like you said, Greg, there to add to the list of several other things that are already going on. And it's just basically, like I said, the Wild West that is Everton Football Club at the minute, isn't it?
Unfortunately, it is, yeah. And like I say, I hope for a relatively swift resolution to it, but I fear there won't be one.
And I think if we get a swift one, as I say, from a punishment perspective, we can't afford to lose any points this season. If that's the route, if we are found guilty and it goes down that particular road, we can't afford to drop points this season.
Absolutely.
Because it almost confirms our relegation, doesn't it? So even if we go from, you know, 3 points, 5 points down, we can't. Everton aren't going to be 3 or 5 points clear of relegation zone come the last day of the season. So that's the frightening prospect. So I'm sure if, you know, whatever the situation, Everton, I'm sure, will be keen to drag it out beyond the end of the season. If they can get it past the summer so we can have a transfer window, that would also be pretty handy. I mean, we're all assuming we're going to be found guilty, but it's just typical of Everton fans. Like you say, that's our mindset, is that if anyone is, we are. And there's obviously a reason why it's being referred. But you mentioned, obviously, this is more fuel to the fire, isn't it? Given the relationship between fans and board, you know, given what's been going on for the last few months, protests, a further protest planned before the Spurs game on Monday. Obviously, we haven't seen the board attend a game now for quite a few months. It's just more fuel to the fire for fans, understandably so, given the fact that there's so many issues that we have as a fan base with the board, with the owner, and the future beyond this. Like Lee said, then, you know, he feels that these people should certainly step away. That's how many people will feel, and now I think people from outside will now maybe be a little bit more understanding. I'm going to say from outside, other fans, of why fans have done what they've done in recent weeks and recent months.
Well, I mean, there's certainly, it's hard to argue with any of that, and I think the only thing I'd sort of say, just to kind of slightly rewind back to our previous point, is thinking on it. And this is obviously trying to be optimistic, but I am. My guess is that if the alleged breach won't be a huge, like a blatant, glaring, massive breach, I think it might be a negligible one or a smaller one. That's nevertheless the Premier League claim is a breach. So therefore, and again, I'm clutching straws a little bit, but I don't think a proportionate punishment would be point docked. So if I had to guess how this all plays out, if Everton are found by the committee to have been in breach, I'm hoping and thinking that just a little bit of common sense would suggest that, and also it would be obviously as well, if it was found in breach, the first offence, I'm hoping that a points deduction would be unlikely. But I can understand why people might go, oh, this is Everton, no chance to throw the book at us. But I think just applying a little bit of common sense to it, maybe that wouldn't happen. But clearly, you know, as you say as well, Mike, it does. It just adds that malaise around the club, and perhaps it does, you know, for what it's worth, other fans who would question why they're processed before games and why there's confusion and anger about the club, I think they could understand a little bit more now as things like this happen.
Well, in the grand scheme of things, I'd agree with that, definitely. Because if you look at it, Everton have tried their utmost to try and obviously improve their books. You know, we've essentially had to sell Richarlison on the last day of July, probably lower than market value, you know, to Spurs, who used that to their advantage in terms of negotiating. you know, to essentially get one of our best players out the door. You know, and we've managed to get a lot of other players who were on high wages, your Delph, your people like that, you know, all off the books as well. You know, and we've barely signed anybody in the windows. The only one we've signed of any sort of amount, you'd say, is obviously Onana, where, you know, we've got him on obviously a Klarna deal over 5 years, 6 years, isn't it? You know what I mean? So I think if anything, Everton have done what they can. You know, even in the Benitez summer transfer window, it was, you know, what was it, 1.5-2 million quid they spent. The January window just gone, we've sold one of our young players for 40 million. By all accounts, most of that money up front, and we've not signed anybody. So Everton, you know, if you're looking at the books, and certainly this financial year we're in now, that will be taken into consideration as well. You know, what are Everton doing now to try and improve that situation? Well, what they're clearly doing is, over the last few transfer windows, we've clearly made a profit, you know, unlike pretty much every other club in the league. You know, we've sold Richarlison, we've sold Lucas Digne, we've sold Anthony Gordon. Well, there's £130 million worth of players there just in those three. Never mind some of the other, you know, some of the other players we've sold around the periphery of the squad. So I think I agree with you, Greg. I mean, common sense should prevail here, and they go, look, what are Everton trying to do to fix this? They're trying to improve their books. You know, you look at other things, like I said before, the way Newcastle's ownership is. You look at how United are heavily debted. I think they're, what, £700 million in debt. You know, a lot of other clubs are in debt as well. Spurs as well are included in that. So, you know, we're clearly not the only club in the league that, you know, you'd say, you know, not in a really sort of financial difficult situation.
Absolutely. Let's hope common sense in that respect it does prevail if Everton are found to have been in breach.
Totally agree. And hopefully, as you say, common sense is the approach. But we understand, we're in it ourselves. We understand, obviously, the feeling around things. But let's see how it plays out. Accounts are out this week, of course. So we'll get a little bit more information then. But, you know, it's not going to be a quick process. That's for sure. We wouldn't have thought so. One to keep our eye on, that's for sure. But Greg, I know you've got to get off. We appreciate you spending a bit of time with us talking through that and giving you thoughts on all things Everton.
Thanks, lads. It's a pleasure.
And we're going to take a short break before me and Lee come back to discuss the upcoming game against Spurs on Monday.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And next game coming up, obviously international break is now officially over. It looks like all Everton players came back unharmed, which is always positive. I know Seamus Coleman had a little bit of a niggle, but he did play against France and played particularly well, actually, against Kylian Mbappe. But all players seem to have returned without any kind of notable injuries, which is a positive. We've got a couple of extra days rest as well, given the fact that we're playing Monday night. And Lee, it's Spurs. We welcome to Goodison Park under the lights, Monday night football. Change of manager. Obviously, Antonio Conte's outburst post-Southampton, wasn't it? Didn't go down too well. I think he was always pushing for the exit, to be honest with you. It's what he does. Spurs throwing away, obviously, a 3-1 lead there. And the job for the short term, on an interim basis, has been given to effectively his former assistant, isn't it? Christian Stellini has got the job. Done the job in his absence, actually, when Conte obviously had an operation and he was out of action for a few weeks. And Stellini took over the reins then for a short period of time. So we had a conversation, me and you, yesterday around this. And it's not as if to bring in a brand new manager, you know, I imagine if they brought Pochettino back or something, you know, something like that, to give them that sort of bounce, that new manager bounce. They've worked with this manager for a couple of years now, so we're not sort of in the situation where I'm concerned about a new manager bounce. I don't know about you.
Yeah, before we go on that, I do love a Conte rant, though, don't you? I absolutely love him. That rant he's done, the most recent one, will go down in Premier League history, that, won't it? Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't hold back, does he? You know, he's criticising the players for not having any bottle. He was criticising Levy, saying this club will always be the same. While he's been here, they'll never win anything. He's just absolutely brilliant, isn't he? He's absolute gold. And he didn't hold back as a player when he was a player, if you remember as well. But no, yeah, you're right. It was only a matter of time before it became untenable, his position. He's now moved on. His assistant's now taken over the role, which is a bit of a surprise. I agree with you. I think I said the same to you yesterday, that if Poch was coming in, and that seems to be the rumour, he may come in the summer now. He obviously knows the club. He's loved by the fans. You know, he turned Tottenham, let's be honest, into a much better side when he was there. They got to a Champions League final. They were unlucky not to win something as well, really. So, you know, if he was coming in now, I think the whole club would have a massive lift. I think Conte, as much as, you know, he's a manager that's liked because of his antics and the way he is on the touchline, and he's clearly an emotional character. I think Spurs fans were becoming more and more drained with the way, the style of football that he plays. Very pragmatic, you know, especially when you consider the talent they've got going forward in that team. You know, and obviously their main rivals, Arsenal, are having, you know, season of dreams at the minute, aren't they, under Arteta? So that's obviously probably, you know, made the situation 10 times worse. So, yeah, in answer to your question, him coming in, hopefully you'd like to think it's a good time to play Spurs after an international break. Obviously, a lot of their players will have gone away, you know, all over the world as well, you know, from Son going east, from obviously the South American players that they've got as well. I think I'm just praying to God Richarlison isn't fit. I know he pulled out the Brazil squad, didn't he? So, you know, the last thing we'd want is Richarlison playing against us at Goodison Park. We know how the script goes if that happens. But yeah, no, it's an interesting game. You know, Goodison under the lights, Monday Night Football. Our record against them is really indifferent. We've had some cracking games against them, but they've always seemed to have had the edge on us, haven't they, over the years? So, you know, let's just say we're due a win. We're due a win against them, I think.
We are. I mean, obviously, we need a win as well, given obviously where we are in the table. The fact we've, excuse me, played a couple more games in some sides, one more than others. And, you know, looking at Spurs and their injury concerns, you mentioned there Richarlison. He's 50-50, I think, to make the game. Perisic is 50-50. Lloris, obviously, he's been out for a little while, hasn't he? Replaced by Fraser Forster. He's 50-50. Sessegnon, a little bit further away. Obviously, Bentancur's out, I think, for the season. Emerson Royal confirmed he's got 6 weeks out. He was injured during the international break. Ben Davis is out as well. So they've got a few concerns there, Spurs. And like you say, international week, there's been quite a bit of travelling, especially for some of the more high-profile players for Spurs, should we say. And, you know, it's one of those games where, you know, Spurs, obviously they're fighting at the top end of the table. They're in and around Champions League positions. Change their minds here on the back of the fact that, you know, one is out base, but, you know, not in scintillating form, that's for sure. So I think it's a game that we can certainly approach without any kind of fear. Now, whether it's a good or bad thing, obviously, all of the sides in and around us will have played before we do on Monday, with us being the last game of the weekend. Now, that can work in your favour, depending on how the sides get on. It can also work against you as well if other sides put the pressure on and you find yourselves dropping down the table. But there's a busy week next week. Obviously, there's games Tuesday and Wednesday, which involves sides in and around Everton, who've got games in hand. So it's going to be a pivotal week, to be honest with you. And it should give us a bit more of a... basically a better look at things in terms of the table and teams playing the same number of games. But it's as I say, going back to the Spurs game, you know, they've got quality regardless. You know, obviously you've got Harry Kane, who's just become the England's all-time leading goal scorer, dangerous on, you know, any day of the week. We know obviously the qualities of Son. I'm sure that he'll get a lot of stick. He has done ever since the Andre Gomez injury. But they are, as I say, they are missing players as well. And Everton have got to pull on the fact that, you know, we're doing okay under Sean Dyche. Goodison Park has become a difficult place for opposition sides to play football once again, I feel. Everton have obviously last game got a great draw against Chelsea away. We've beaten Arsenal recently. We've beaten a good Brentford side recently. So there should be no fear. Should be no fear. And like I say, the fact that we've got players luckily coming back by all accounts without any kind of injury issues, Everton have got a really, really decent chance there picking up points. And it's certainly a game, when we're looking at fixtures remaining, looking at where Everton can pick up points, this is one probably I certainly earmarked, as much as I try to avoid looking too far ahead, I earmarked as one that we can most definitely win.
Yeah, I think. I mean, like I said, it's a good time to play Spurs, losing obviously their manager, and also the fact that, like I said, so many of their squad play all over the world as well. I mean, look, it doesn't guarantee us a win. Of course, it doesn't. They're still, like you said, they're still full of quality. They're likely going to have a front three of obviously Kane through the middle, Son off the left, and Kulusevski off the right, who's, I really like as a footballer. He's done really well since he's come in there. No Bentancur in midfield, a massive bonus, because I think he was having a very good season for them. You know, fantastic all-round player. He played very well in the game when we lost at their place, didn't he, in that game as well. So, yeah, they are there to be beaten. And I think, you know, you said the key is now, with these games in hand, obviously we've played a game more than a lot of the teams around. I think we've played two more than West Ham as well, haven't we? So, you know, nabbing a win here at Goodison on Monday could be absolutely vital. I know obviously Dyche will always tell you, look, forget about the table now, it's about the table at the end of the season. That's right. But, you know, players, anyone, us as fans, we're all going to be looking at the table. And it does have a mental impact. You know, Palace have now been dragged into it. They've just pulled Roy Hodgson out of his retirement for the umpteenth time. What is he now, 84 or something like that? You know what I mean? So they're clearly clutching at straws. You know, I think that could be a good thing for us, him coming in. I know he'll try and grind out some points, but, you know, who did he come in last season? Where did he go last season?
Watford.
Obviously he took them down eventually. So let's see how that plays out, because Palace, weirdly, they haven't won a game before since we've come back after the World Cup, yet they somehow miraculously stayed around 12th, haven't they? Which shows you that all the teams below them have sort of been beating each other, or, you know, winning games and losing games and things like that. So, you know, Palace downwards now, it's a crazy season, isn't it? You know, we could end up going into the last maybe game or two, last two games of the season with potentially seven teams that could go down. It's absolutely nuts when you think about it. You don't want to be in that position. Of course you don't. You know, we'd rather make sure... If we can pull two wins together out of nowhere, or possibly even three, which would be dreamland, I think you can pretty much confirm your safety just by having a few runs on the trot, a few games on the trot. So, you know, if we can get a win here against Spurs, you know, we know the home games are vital. We know that Goodison plays a big factor. The fans have been brilliant since Dyche has come in. We had, like you said, had a great win against an informed Brentford side, and deserved to win that game as well. So, it's massive, Mike. It's a massive game. You know, if we can just nab those 3 points, it'll just make so much difference to the confidence of the team, because then you've won two on the bounce. Because we drew with Chelsea. But you know what I mean? We'll have then sort of, what is that? Would be four games unbeaten then. You know what I mean? So it's a massive game, this. And like I said, psychologically, if anything else.
You're right, and psychologically, I think that's the most important thing at this stage of the season as well, is the mental aspect of it. And picking up points and pulling away from the drop zone, giving yourself a bit of breathing space, is one of those things that can certainly improve that element. I mean, obviously, for Crystal Palace, they are getting sucked in. But you look at their next run of fixtures, you know, they've got Leicester at the weekend, then Leeds, Southampton, us, Wolves, West Ham, and he's still got Bournemouth and Forest to play before the end of the season. So, they've got a lot of sides down there. So I expect Palace to pull away. And to be honest, I would rather Palace beat Leicester this weekend, to be fair. Palace are above us anyway. Keep Leicester down there, who are below us. That would be a better situation, in my opinion. But, you know, we've got to play, you know, as much as we haven't got to play as many sides down there, We've still got to play Palace. We've still got to play Wolves. We've still got to play Bournemouth, last game of the season. There's still games that we've got against sides in and around where we are. But you hope that over the next few weeks, what is it, Tottenham on Monday, away to United. Obviously, we've then got Fulham at Goodison Park. Newcastle coming up at Goodison Park as well. You know, you'd hope in the next sort of three or four games, if we can pick up sort of 6-7 points, if not more, that puts you into a semi-decent position. It really does. You know, as I said this last season, we had this conversation when Everton were in the drop zone, but we had two games in hand on sides around us. I was still saying, listen, points on the board means a lot more than games in hand than it does, because you can't take those points away. And, you know, but you can lose games at hand, and that's the really key thing for me. We've got to now. We want to try and avoid, you know, the last sort of couple of games. We want to try and avoid being in a situation where we need to be picking up major points. You know, okay, maybe one or two, but we don't want to be needing sort of 4 to 6 points in the last two games to be ensuring safety. And this is a game where we can certainly ensure that we pick something up. As I say, Spurs are top four, but they've got Newcastle and Liverpool with games in hand, hot on the tail at this moment in time. So, you know, it's certainly not assured of being in the top four position. Are they going to start to feel the pressure? All depends, obviously, what happens before they play us, of course. But I don't approach the game with any kind of fear, that's for sure. And Everton have got to believe that they can win the game. But always difficult. We know it is. We know it is against these top sides. And Spurs have qualified for the Champions League football numerous times in recent years, and there's a reason why. We've got players that can hurt us, but we've shown we've got the stomach for the fight. We've got players who can battle for this team, and you know, I believe there's enough characters in our side who basically will fight and do whatever they can to keep us in the Premier League. But it's going to be white hot, I think, on Monday night. We mentioned obviously the protest before the game, of course. I feel that they're going to be ramped up, understandably so. Obviously, under the lights is always a good atmosphere at Goodison Park. The sirens are back, of course, so we all call for them to come back, and they're a great addition to Goodison Park once again. Son is back in town, as I mentioned earlier on. You know, people don't forget what happened with Andre Gomez, so we'll be getting a little bit of stick. So I just hope that we do put a performance in, and we do show that we can fight and keep this side in the Premier League. But let's have your prediction. What are you thinking, Lee? Do you think that we can beat Spurs under the new Instagram manager?
Well, like I said, I mean, a lot of things are going in our favour. We've just gone over them. You know, the number of players they've got out, the change of manager for them, the timing of the fixtures just after the international break. So there's a lot of things there that you'd say that are positives. We've still got to go out and put in a performance. Let's not forget that. You know, at home recently, we've started quickly. You know, we put teams under pressure. Like anything, we just need to be able to get that goal, don't we? Get that first goal. If we do get the first goal, and, you know, a night game at Goodison, you'd like to fancy us after that. You know, Spurs have just got that so much quality going for. We've got to try and keep Harry Kane quiet. He has destroyed us in a few games in the past. The guy doesn't need even half a chance, you know, to score a goal. So I just think the optimistic side of me thinks I think we'll nick it, mate. I'm going to say 2-1 Everton. I think Spurs will score, but I just think, you know, everything on the line. Night game at Goodison. You know, we've had a half decent little run of results recently. I'm going to say 2-1.
I mean, I love your optimism, and you know, I do think that we can certainly do damage to some of these sides and certainly pick up 3 points. I think it might be a draw. I'm siding with 1-1, but it could. I think if it's going to be one, it'll be nicked by a goal either way. I just think that they are a difficult side, Spurs. As I say, I don't think it's quite as bad as them having a brand new manager in. They've worked with this gentleman, obviously, for quite a while, well over 12 months. You know, they brought in Conte when we were his first game, weren't we, Goodison Park, when Benitez was still there. So he's been in charge. He's been there for sort of 18 months, not quite 2 years. But They know his methods. I'm sure he's had responsibility in some way, shape or form around tactics already. Whether it gives him a little bit more freedom, because I know some of the players said they felt a little bit hampered under Conte's tactics. I don't know. It's all guesswork. But I think we'll get something from the game. I really do. I think 1-1 draw. But I'll sort of caveat that with that it could be won by either side by probably a goal either way, to be honest. But looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting back to Goodison Park. Looking forward to Premier League football being back. International breaks are always a little bit of a bit of a drag, but it's been a good bit of rest for certain players as well. You know, although we've had a few players go away, but we've seen a few players on holiday. Obviously, they've done a bit of training. They'll be back in, of course, now. So it'd be good for them to just break away from the pressures of this relegation battle, and then hopefully refocus for Monday night. But that's us for this week's show. We'll be back next week at some point to look back at the Spurs game, obviously with it being a Monday night, and then to look ahead to the trip, difficult trip to Old Trafford to face Manchester United. So we'll catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.